Father and Son, Chapter 63. Time moves on. A year is past, the first year of Saul's reign. Alas, the outcome was so different from what the people had expected. They had imagined that their king would disperse the enemies from their country, and that they would live happily and prosperously from then on. And nothing develops. It is true, the Ammonites with their cruel king Nahash were defeated, but that was the only thing which was done. The Philistines still ruled in the land of Canaan itself. The Israelites could do nothing. Philistine soldiers were garrisoned over the entire country, and they oppressed the children of Israel. The Philistines had taken every smith out of the land. They did this so that the Israelites could not make swords and spears for themselves. The Israelites were not permitted to have any weapons, and without them they could not fight. This is a great humiliation for the children of Israel. There were no swords or spears to be found throughout all the land, for the Philistines had taken them. Only Saul, the king, and Jonathan, the oldest son of Saul, had weapons. If they could make new spears, it wouldn't have been so bad. But just to prevent this, the enemy had taken all the smiths captive. It was so bad that when their axes were dull or blunt, they couldn't even sharpen them. They had to go to the Philistines to ask if they would please sharpen their axes for them. Yes, they had to go to their enemies with everything, with their spades which they used to dig the ground, and also with their plows to make them sharper. Such misery. What benefit do they have with their king? None. None. The Israelites had to learn that if the heavenly king did not help, neither could the earthly king help. They had put aside the Lord, their heavenly king, but the Lord will not permit himself to be put aside. He rules over them, whether they want it or not. All their expectation has come to naught. It has become a great disappointment. Listen, the trumpet is being blown. The Israelites know what that means. They must come together. They are being called to battle. They dare not remain at home, so they get ready. But a frightening fear fills their hearts. With what must they fight? They have no weapons. Ah, it is true, the one takes a threshing instrument, another a fork, a third a heavy club. But really, these are no weapons with which they can win the war, are they? Why are they called to come together? Does Saul want to resist the Philistines? Does he want to fight against them? Something must have taken place. Saul had a small army together, consisting of only 3,000 soldiers. 2,000 were with him, and 1,000 were with Jonathan. Jonathan, with his 1,000 soldiers, attacked a small army of Philistines and put them to flight. Courageous Jonathan! How did he dare do it? Jonathan was a young prince who feared God. He obtained the victory with the help of God. But the Philistines heard of it, and they became exceedingly angry. "Just wait," they said. "We will teach these despised Israelites a thing or two." They gather their entire army together. Every soldier must come. Such an army. It is an enormous army. They had 6,000 horsemen and iron chariots too. Upon the chariot rode 30,000 men, and besides those, and there were ordinary foot soldiers. All these Philistines were well armed. They invaded the land of Israel with this mighty army. That is the reason the trumpet is blown. That is why the Israelites are called to battle. Saul must call his soldiers together. He is forced to do it. But Saul's army has no horsemen or iron chariots. The Israelites don't even have swords and spears. Therefore, it isn't surprising that the Israelites are afraid. Tremblingly, they follow Saul. Behold, there goes the army of the Israelites up the highway. Where are they going? Are they going to meet the enemy? Why, no, they are marching back towards Gilgal, close to the banks of Jordan. So, this war begins by retreating. What must become of it now? Is Saul afraid? Doesn't he dare fight? Oh yes, he dares to all right, but he is not permitted to go up to battle. He must go back. The Lord informed him to do this through the aged Samuel. Saul must wait 7 days at Gilgal, then Samuel will come and sacrifice. Saul doesn't care to obey, but neither does he dare to be disobedient. Therefore he goes to Gilgal. That is the best thing to do, Saul. Not you, but God rules over Israel. It is such a pitiable little army. The king leads and the soldiers follow. They are unarmed and they tremble. They come to Gilgal and wait. Perhaps Saul hoped that Samuel would come sooner than the appointed time. But he does not. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 days pass by slowly. While waiting and sitting quietly, the Israelites begin to meditate. They see the utter impossibility of ever obtaining the victory in such a way. They cannot win. They surely will be defeated. Probably it will cost them their lives. Do you know what? Look, there goes one creeping stealthily away. He is going home to his wife and children. Over there goes another. A little later, another. Sometimes a whole group leaves the army at the same time. Their number decreases day by day. The Israelites do not remember that God is almighty. Saul sees this, but cannot prevent it. He gets angry. Why doesn't Samuel come? Why does Samuel remain away so long? With big, angry strides, he walks up and down in his tent. The sixth day passes by. Samuel does not come, and the army becomes smaller and smaller. Why, yes, Saul will wait until tomorrow, but then his patience will be at an end. Who does Samuel think he is? Saul is the king, isn't he? He doesn't have to permit himself to be deceived, does he? Saul continues to get angrier. The break of the following day comes. Saul waits, but no Samuel. It is midday. Evening comes, still no Samuel. Saul waits no longer. He fetches an animal for the offering, and it is sacrificed. We do not know whether Saul did this himself, children. Maybe he let a priest do it, But in any event, he did not wait for the coming of Samuel. He no longer dared to wait, nor would he wait, for he will have no soldiers left. The great mistake of Saul was that he did not believe in the almighty power of God. The Lord doesn't need a large army. Didn't we see that with the history of Gideon? He only had 300 men, and Samson fought all alone. Gideon and Samson were champions of faith. They believed in the omnipotence of God. But Saul does not. Saul is no champion of faith. Saul is without faith. Saul is unbelieving. The clouds of smoke have scarcely risen when Saul is informed that Samuel is coming. Immediately, Saul goes to meet him. Samuel looks at him seriously. "What have you done?" he asks sternly. So, he already knows it. Did the Lord make it known to Samuel? Saul answers nervously, "I didn't dare wait any longer. You remained away so long, and all my soldiers have been going home. Besides, the army of the Philistines is close by. They can attack us at any moment, and then I would have to fight without sacrificing. That is why I did it. I had to do it. Otherwise, everything would be lost." He is silent. "What you say is not true, Saul. Samuel is not late. He is exactly on time. But you are too early." Samuel shakes his head. "No, Saul," Samuel's voice rings out in all seriousness. "You have done foolishly. You were not obedient to the command of the Lord. You have placed yourself above God. Therefore, your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord will give Israel another king. He will be a sovereign who will perform the commandments of the Lord." Behold, Samuel turns and goes away. There is nothing for him to do in Gilgal. The offering has already been performed. Saul counts his soldiers who still remain with him. It is only a small army of 600 men. That isn't many, is it? What is he able to do with so few? One day, Saul sits in front of his tent. He is sad and discouraged and probably dissatisfied too. Things are not going well. The Philistines become more and more daring. Three companies of Philistine soldiers march through the land, plundering and murdering. They ruin everything. They destroy and wreck whatever they come across. And Saul stands powerless against it. For this reason, he is so discouraged and sad. Suddenly, he listens sharply. He hears a violent noise, which comes from the place far in the distance where the army of the Philistines lies. He jumps up and listens more sharply. What is that? What does that mean? He doesn't know. The uproar becomes stronger. He hears crying and screaming. Finally, he has no more patience. He will go find out what is going on. He first asks, "Is everyone here? Is there anyone missing?" It appears that Jonathan and his armor-bearer have left them. Where can they be? Jonathan has gone out, for he cannot sit still any longer. He takes his servant along. Together they climb up toward the Philistines. They are discovered, and the Philistines deride them. "Come here if you dare," they shout jeeringly. "Then we will kill you." Jonathan cannot tolerate that. "Will you come along?" he asks his armor-bearer. "Yes," resounds his answer. Courageously, they go to meet the mocking enemies. Jonathan begins to fight alone. Alone? No, God, the Almighty One, helps him. 20 Philistines are killed by Jonathan. But something else happened. Suddenly, the ground shook and cracked. It was an earthquake. The Philistines began to be afraid. God frightened them. They fall into disorder. Everyone cries and screams. This is the tumult which Saul hears when he sits in front of his tent. It isn't very long before the mighty army of the Philistines takes flight. Saul calls his soldiers together, and they pursue the enemy. The Philistines abandon everything which they had taken out of their own country. Saul is afraid that the Israelites will eat of the spoil, and that they will not continue their pursuit of the Philistines. Therefore, he commands his soldiers not to eat anything. Yes, he pronounces a curse upon anyone who would dare eat anything. That is a pity. It is also foolish of Saul, for the people became very tired. At last, they hardly can go further. Jonathan did not hear his command, because he was not present when his father said it. While he walks through the woods, he sees some honey, wild honey. He has no time to eat any of it leisurely, but as he walks, he puts his staff into the honey and eats a little of it. Lo, he immediately is strengthened from it because he too is tired and hungry. "Don't you also want a little to eat?" he asks some of the other Israelites. "We are not allowed to eat anything," they answer. "Your father strictly forbade us to eat." "That is a pity. That is foolish," Jonathan says. The Israelites cannot pursue any more. They are weary, and thereby the Philistines make their escape. Most of them reach their own country safely. Yes, they have been driven out of the land of the children of Israel, but they have not been destroyed. Later, it comes to the attention of Saul that Jonathan had eaten something, not knowing the command of his father. "Why did you do that, Jonathan?" "I did not know it, father. I wasn't there when you forbade the people." "And then?" "Oh, boys and girls, Saul is such a foolish person. He says, 'Jonathan, you must surely die.' He even confirms it with an oath." The people stand by in silence and hear all this. But when Saul says that Jonathan must be slain, they begin to talk. "No," they say decidedly, "we will not permit that. Jonathan was just the one whom the Lord used, and by him we have obtained the victory. No, king, Jonathan will not die." They too say this with an oath. Now Saul dare not kill his son Jonathan. So the people rescued Jonathan from the hand of Saul. Children, let us learn from this story to be very careful in what we say. Saul had adjured the people, charged them with an oath, saying, "Cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening." He spoke unadvisedly, and to uphold this oath, he insisted upon Jonathan's death. We too often speak unadvisedly. So often we hear children, as well as older people, use the words honest to goodness. That is terrible. I warn you in all seriousness, never use these words in order to prove the truth of your statement. There is only one who can carry the name of goodness, and he is God. We are wicked. Permit me at this time to mention a few more phrases which we should never use. They are, for pity's sake, gracious me, my goodness, mercy, etc. Let us often ask the Lord to set a watch before our mouths, that he may keep us from saying these unnecessary words, for by saying them we are swearing.